Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becklass AB to CV 2024 Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I f***ing love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy and Frank Mir is hurt now.
Down goes Duffy on call. Frank Mir does it again.
Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
There are a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
All right, I placed a straight wager on my home studio today as an even money underdog to make it through the whole program. We have reset everything. We have updated everything. I'm betting on the even money underdog. Yes, studio makes it through today. No is minus 120. Great to be back in all of your respective lives. It is Earth Day. Happy Earth Day. Monday, April 22nd, 2024. It is episode 483 of the Anik and Florian podcast. Ken Flo is in Orlando this weekend. Went to a hotel that's got a bunch of water slides for my daughter's 11th birthday. She turns 11 today on this here Earth Day. And I asked my wife at one point, I did have a pina colada at one point in time. I got the extra, you know, dark rum shot in there. I don't have the highest tolerance in the world for that particular substance, poison, alcohol. But I was pretty lit. And I said, honey, can I buy some Bitcoin? And she said no.
What? Come on, dude. Hey, listen, you didn't get lifted before going to SeaWorld. Also, I got to say, in regards to the studio, I don't have a lot of faith in it. Hasn't been consistent. Doesn't have momentum heading into this, dude. Right. So at this stage of his career, I'm hitting all my cliches. All right, that's it. I'm done.
Yeah, my studio does not have a great cardiovascular base. And, you know, some of this show's fan base doesn't even like when I use some of the bells and whistles anyway. Do you like the Ben Askren one? Askren stiff as a board? No?
Askren stiff as a board!
I mean, what's wrong with hearing Askren stiff as a board? I mean, is Bilal going to get a title fight, Kempflo?
Remember the name! Bilal Muhammad!
I mean, can we announce Bilal Muhammad's title fight already, Kenny? What are we doing?
They're teasing us. It's got to be coming up. Like, I feel bad. I saw Bilal, obviously, when we were out in Vegas. I feel bad even asking him about it. He's just like, we're trying, man. We'll see what happens. So, yeah, poor guy.
So this weekend, I'm going to Las Vegas this weekend, and I got invited by the UFC, not by Patrick Mahomes directly, but to play in Patrick Mahomes's charity golf tournament. Whoa. At Shadow Creek in Las Vegas this weekend. So I don't know if I'm the worst golfer in the field. I hadn't played in about 2.5 years. I went through a time where I was playing with Daniel Cormier pretty regularly. Haven't played in about 2.5 years. So I went out there and man, did I chop it up. I'm trying to practice, Kenny. This could be ugly. Hopefully there's no gallery or I could, I could get in real trouble, but I don't know. I think I'm going to be pretty nervous when I step on that first tee.
Dude, that's awesome. That's freaking really awesome. Hey, but you're better than DC, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was certainly when we used to play, if I can say that. I think right now he's probably better than me, everything in the cup. He's calling the fights, and I'm not sure that he is playing despite the invite. Justin Gaethje is playing, and I went on Ryan Russillo's podcast on The Ringer, and I said, Justin Gaethje, I would imagine, will still show up. And we're going to get to Justin Gaethje here in a second in terms of his fighting future. But Justin Gaethje, much better golfer than me, incidentally.
Really?
Nice takeaway. Just a better athlete than me. Just a better human being. Just Gaethje better than me at everything. So, but you think about the conversations that Justin Gaethje is going to have with a lot of these NFL players relative to what those conversations might have held if he had held on 1 second longer in that BMF title fight against Max Holloway, you know? And I just bring it up because you brought up running into Bilal Muhammad, and you can imagine how many thousands of times he's had to have the conversation. Oh, you getting the title fight? It's like, fuck if I know, right? Fudge if I know, as Bilal would say. But for Gaethje, he's going to have a lot of similar conversations, I would imagine. Like, oh man, you know, but what an absolute warrior Justin Gaethje is. And speaking of which, headlines brought to you by Cuervo. Now's a good time to enjoy the tequila that invented tequila. So Justin Gaethje is not done. Now, our good friend and colleague, RJ Clifford, pushed out a tweet suggesting that maybe Justin Gaethje should walk away like this. And in some respects, Kenny, I agree with the sentiment that this could be the perfect capstone for Justin Gaethje to go out on, right? Face down to the canvas after this epic war with Max Holloway. There's nothing left to prove. Now, yes, he could still be one win away from the undisputed UFC lightweight championship. And I think that enough is reason to stick around. And maybe he just doesn't want to go out on this particular visual. But I do subscribe to some of RJ's theory that this would be a pretty epic way for Gaethje to go out. Like, you know what? I gave you fans more than 99.9% of professional athletes ever give. And this is how I'm going to go out. But if you believe him at his word, and we do, Justin Gaethje is going to fight on, Kenflo.
Yeah, listen, I don't think he's done either. I think that there were a lot of things that didn't go right for him that night. And sometimes that's just the way it goes. This sport will giveth and it will taketh away just as easily. And Gaethje's been on the right side a lot of those things. I mean, even, you know, go back to the Dustin Poirier fight. It didn't seem like things were going great for him. And all of a sudden he hits that head kick and everything changes. He's the man again. And, you know, here he was in this fight, had a couple eye gouges. Things weren't going well. And, you know, ultimately lost in the last second of that fight. But no shame in losing to someone like Max Holloway at all. So by no means am I looking at this and going, oh, Gaethje's done. He needs to retire. I think he's got another couple fights left in him. And he has said himself that he didn't see him with this style, it being a long-term plan. He wanted to get in and kind of get out. So one or two fights seems appropriate for me. You know, I think maybe a rematch against Charles Oliveira makes a lot of sense at this stage of the game, but there's so many more exciting fights left for him. Will he take all of those exciting fights? Probably not. Maybe one or two.
I'm not sure I've come down yet from UFC 300. And as we transition to Max Holloway, who is in position in theory to fight for three belts, he could either defend the BMF title or fight for the undisputed featherweight championship against Ilia Topuria, or fight for the undisputed lightweight championship against whomever has it when that point in time arrives. So if Max Holloway's next fight is for the undisputed featherweight championship and you had to put together a fight for the BMF belt, and I wanted to sort of make you qualify this or insert a caveat that you couldn't put together a BMF fight with somebody who has competed for that particular prize prior. But if you were the UFC and Max was fighting Ilia Topuria and you wanted to do something with Gaethje or Charles Oliveira or some of these guys, ideally guys who haven't fought for it, but I know it's difficult. And you can go Max if you want to. But if you're making a BMF title fight, what fight are you putting together right here in 2024?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I would say this. I think if Max is involved, I would love to see him against another BMF in Chandler. I think that would be a phenomenal fight. But I do have some other options for guys that aren't. I went a little bit like I went one in a higher weight class and one in a lower weight class to give you a little variety. Okay. One, Piotr Jan and Davison Figueiredo are two guys that always bring it, that love to throw down. They're 135 pounders, but they can be BMFs too. I would love to see a fight between those guys and also MVP and Wonderboy. And I think they've said something that maybe that fight isn't going to happen, but MVP and Wonderboy, two badasses, two karate backgrounds, two strikers, you know, we're going to deliver. So that would be a lot of fun as well.
I think you got me a Piotr Jan. It feels like that's the right answer and I shouldn't even give mine. I feel like you should build a BMF title fight around Piotr Jan. So Charles Oliveira has fought 33 times in the UFC. Bobby King Green has fought 25 times in the UFC. And those are just two of the baddest motherfuckers, right? And certainly Charles has maybe a softer side than Bobby Green does. Certainly we've seen the shoot to box spirit and all the love that that team has for one another. And we've seen the kinship with Bobby Green and his teammates and his longtime head coach, Sam Mason, right? But Charles Oliveira versus Bobby Green to me is the BMF title fight that I would put together if I did not have Max Holloway in defense of that particular prize. So Max Holloway, Ilia Topuria, and Cody, perhaps you could chase a betting line on DraftKings Sportsbook, but because we have the time, Brian Stan always says to me, the most powerful thing is self-belief. When we talk about the NFL and my ability to go call that sport, having not called football since 2015, he feels like a lot of my ability to call that sport is just rooted in the self-belief I have in myself as a broadcaster. And going into Ilia Topuria's championship fight against Alexander Volkanovski, I just feel like he was perpetually misunderstood by the masses, that they felt like it was cockiness and arrogance. And it really wasn't. It was just like confidence in the skills, self-belief in the development and the path. And when you hear Ilia Topuria talk about finishing Max Holloway already, it's hard not to take him at his word. So Max Holloway, Ilia Topuria, I actually have prayed for this fight already. This needs to be the next fight. Ilya says it's going to be the next fight. Kenny, who wins that fight?
This is such an insane fight. I'd be leaning towards Topuria, right? And the reason for that is I truly believe, and I think it's confirmed after that last fight that Max Holloway had against Justin Gaethje, that his better weight class is 155 pounds. I think at 145 pounds, I think that's a tough weight cut for him, which forces him to have to manage his energy perhaps a little bit better or more efficiently and more carefully. At 155, I think he can kind of let it rip a little bit more. Now, it sounds kind of weird because we've seen him break all these records at 145 pounds, right, with the volume output that he's put out. But I fear that at this stage of his life with his age and how long he's been around the sport, that maybe that weight cut's taking too much for him. Now, can Max Holloway win that fight? There is no question in my mind that he can, but Topuria's power, his ability to corral you into really tough spots, and we can't forget about his ability to out-grapple you as well, I think makes him a slight favorite in my mind at this point.
Johnny Avello has not opened it as yet on DraftKings Sportsbook. It seems like one of the lines floating out there, Ilia Topuria minus 175, Max Holloway plus 150. Wicked interesting. Oof. Dream matchup for me. And when Brian Ortega won that rematch against Yair Rodriguez, I do think he injected himself back into the equation. But for me, the dream scenario and the sequence always was, with respect to Volk getting that immediate rematch that, in theory, he is richly deserving of if he doesn't want to take the time off, it's got to be Max Holloway and Ilia Topuria. And I kind of wish I could tell the masses the direction in which I'm leaning, but I can't because I am hopeful that I'll be assigned that particular championship fight. All right. It looks as though maybe July 27th could be UFC Manchester, England. I've seen a lot of rumblings. I don't know that that has been confirmed. Kenny, Tom Aspinall potentially in defense of his UFC interim heavyweight championship. It's got to happen. I mean, I don't know if John Jones is going to fight in 2024. It's already April 22nd, right? We have our fight for International Fight Week, Conor McGregor and Michael Chandler. Hopefully Madison Square Garden for John Jones and Stipe, but I'm not holding my breath, right? That fight was scheduled in that very building, November 2023. So I think Tommy Aspinall is going to have to defend this interim championship, and he doesn't seem reluctant to do so. Are you thinking Curtis Razor Blades, Kenny? Are you thinking there is something maybe a little bit more out of left field? I don't think it's going to be Alex Pineda. What are you thinking about the likelihood and potential opponent for Tommy Aspinall to make that walk in interim defense this summer in Manchester, England?
I think Curtis Blades is a great option, but on my mind, I would love to see Aspinall against Cyril Gane. You know, obviously Cyril Gane is from France. You can get the Europeans to come over, make it a big one. So that's the one that I'd be looking at most. Yeah.
Yeah. No, the Cyril Gane fight makes a lot of sense, and there have been some back and forths between those gentlemen. So maybe that'll be the fight. That would make a shit ton of sense as well. And Dana White has hinted, and I apologize for not having the particular credit, that Leon Edwards and Tom Aspinall both could potentially be defending belts. I actually think it was an interview with fucking Stefan Struve, if I'm being honest, Shout out to the skyscraper, Stefan fucking Struve. I won't hit the applause button because I don't want to offend some of you folks. But Leon Edwards, Kenny, right? Like, can you imagine? Like, as soon as I sit down next to Chael Sonnen on set, he starts talking about, like, dude, they're not going to pass over Bilal, right? Like, I think Chael Sonnen in the closet has become, like, the biggest Bilal Muhammad fan in the world. Full stop, right? It's just got to be Leon Edwards, Bilal Muhammad, right? The rematch, right? Yeah. I mean, there's nobody else even being considered. Is that right?
Chael Sonnen, don't hang out in the closet, dude. Listen, I think it's going to be MVP against Leon Edwards. Make it happen. That's the one that should. No, I'm just kidding. It's going to be Bilal and Leon Edwards, you know, for 304. I think that's a fight that makes a lot of sense. We've been talking about it for a long time. And I think the way to make that extremely exciting is put in Leon Edwards' home country. You know, blow it out. Put him in there against Bilal. And, you know, I'm just really curious to see if both guys are going to be able to stay healthy. That fight has kind of been a little bit cursed, but I don't know. I think it's going to happen finally, and that's going to be the event.
All right, Ray Longo coming up shortly. But before that, I just did want to get your thoughts now, having a week or so removed from UFC 300 in terms of mixed martial arts and its domestic growth here in the United States of America. By the way, we're going stars and stripes with the One More Sleep, johnanek.com, yes. Promo code One More Sleep for 20% off. It did dawn on me that we've created all these designs for these other countries. Heaven forbid, you know, you make a shirt for Team USA. So in terms of the domestic growth of the UFC, so we did an appearance with Cuervo in advance of UFC 300, and we were there with former Tampa Bay Ray and Arizona Diamondback Evan Longoria, and one of his dear friends who is a rabid MMA fan. And this dude didn't watch a lick of this stuff prior to COVID-19, the global pandemic. I believe Evan Longoria predates his dear friend. And I know Evan at one point in time actually went back and started watching it like UFC 1. Wow. But it's undeniable that this fan base swelled considerably in the US during the global pandemic when we were the only show in town and Dana White was going through brick walls to keep us live and keep the event going, right? But UFC 300, as its own entity, did absolute monster numbers. And you couldn't have really drawn it up much better in terms of the way the night played out, right? So this is another one of those launching pad type moments. I mean, you and I were at Fox. You can't really, in totality, quantify how much that 7-year Fox deal did to launch the UFC. The ESPN deal in 2019 taking it to the next level. But dude, UFC 300, man, it just feels like one of these jumping off points. I don't want to say it's like the COVID situation, because not quite, but I do feel like gained, you know, a pretty significant uptick last weekend.
There's no question about it, man. And again, I've had the opportunity to travel with you to a couple of these events and see the fans and how they're reacting to this card and kind of taking some of the energy. And this sport has exploded, dude. And it's awesome to see. But, you know, we can't forget about, you know, the foundation that was laid by Dana and the Fertittas early on to kind of grow this sport, doing all these grassroots things and, you know, kind of talking about the sport, educating people about the sport. I was out lobbying different states to kind of get it passed, and to see where we're at now, where this is a sport where other professional athletes prefer to talk about UFC than their own sport. Like,
yeah,
it's nuts to see how far we've come. And yeah, certainly these TV deals have been huge, but the most brilliant move the UFC made was getting this sport, under the eyes of people who had nothing to watch during COVID. And Dana is this guy that had this vision to go, no, I'm going to get this through. I'm going to make it happen. I think that's what makes him, you know, polarizing in a lot of ways, but it's what makes him such a brilliant leader when it comes to this organization is he believes what he believes in, and he's going to make it happen no matter what. And again, it brought in so many fans, again, at a time when they had nothing to watch. They didn't have any sports to watch. And live sporting events is what brings in that excitement. And the UFC gained millions of fans because of it.
The next UFC fight night I call, I'm going to give 2 tickets away to an Anakin Florian podcast listener, wherever in the U.S. that may be. Pay-per-view tickets, a little bit harder to come by. Family and friends just ravenous when it comes to the pay-per-view tickets these days. But you got to see this in person if you haven't done so already, and that will just take your addiction to the next level. But to all the fighters and the coaches and people who have devoted a huge chunk of their lives to mixed martial arts, it's got to be amazing to see the growth in the United States. I mean, I remember thinking it was a huge deal when Kenflo showed up on Dr. Phil, and then he introduced him as Kenny Florini, and I was so upset as the then VP of Team Florian. And let's get to the star of the show, the Ray Longo Minute.
Now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in this fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute.
Starring Ray Longo. The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Tired of snooty wines and their old wine culture? Confused by words like malolactic fermentation? Yeah, we are too. So with 19 Crimes, you can do the fancy schmancy tilt sip smell routine or don't. 19 Crimes is the rebel of wine and culture, telling the stories of rogues and rule breakers who overcame adversities. From convicts banished to Australia to the legendary icon Snoop Dogg himself, 19 Crimes wine is defiant by nature, bold in character, and always uncompromising. 19 Crimes, the official wine of UFC. Pick up in stores nationwide or online at 19crimes.com. Enjoy responsibly. 2024, Sonoma, California.
It's Kentucky Derby time. Are you ready for the greatest 2 minutes in sports? Well, saddle up with DK Horse, an official DraftKings affiliate. So right now, new customers who download the DK Horse app can get a 100% deposit bonus up to $250. All you need to do, deposit $25 or more and complete the playthrough requirement. Download DK Horse now to join the Run for the Roses action. New customers, 100% deposit bonus up to $250 when you opt in with code FLOW, F-L-O, only on the DK Horse app today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER, 18 plus, 21 plus in certain states to open or access an account and a resident of a state where DK Horse is available. Eligibility restrictions apply, void where prohibited. See terms at dkhorse.com, one per new customer. Match calculated on first deposit up to a maximum of $250. Deposit requires two-time playthrough of settled wagers within 168 hours. Bonus released in $25 increments. Deposit and eligibility restrictions apply. See terms at dkhorse.com.
What's up, my man? Oh, we just went to that a little bit. There we go. Look at that.
There he is. What couldn't get on the barber schedule this week. That's okay.
Next week.
All right.
Wait,
how are we doing,
bad?
Raymond?
Feel like it looks okay. I got Kenny's hair.
Well, exactly. A lot of people watch this on like 85-inch high-definition televisions, you know, but it's fine.
I hope so. That's good.
I remember 1999, I walked in on my best friend, Brian Montgomery, having sex with a woman, and he said, it's fine.
Jump in. The water's fine.
My mic just cut out. Can you hear me?
Yeah. We can't. You're still there.
Oh, boy. There he goes. He's off.
Got you. Can you hear us, John?
I tell you, Kenny,
yeah.
When the mustache starts crumbling up like that, it's a bad sign. Look, it's not even his eyes. It's his stash that gives it away. It just starts. What's he doing now? John, can you hear us? Oh, my God.
He's coming back. He's out. He's done. He got
too hot in the kitchen. He's out.
It's just you and me, Ray.
That's it, baby. Let's shoot the shit, Kenny. How was your weekend?
It was good, man. It was pretty good. No fights to watch, really. But other than that, how about you, man? Did you have a nice break? Did you have a break?
I tell you, I did have a break, man. I'm in a little bit of nobody's fighting for a while. We have some local fights coming up. But, yeah, it feels great just to sit in the gym and work out without any, you know, distractions. It's really pretty cool.
Yeah.
And
absolutely, man. So it looks like Aljo, I think, made a pretty good smart call out. He wants to fight Ivloyev, which I think makes a lot of sense because they're similar fighters. You know, Ivloyev's ranked pretty high up there, so he has the potential to kind of rob that spot. What did you think about that call out?
Man, when did he do that? First off, like again,
I don't know if it was necessarily a call out. It was something he was kind of asking for.
Because I thought he called out Ortega, is what I remember. Okay. But You know, I think Aljo wants to test the waters, and he's very calculated. He's very cerebral. He knows how to break down fights. And if he calls out somebody, he's seeing something that he thinks he can exploit, or, you know, whatever their game is, they're not going to be able to implement on him. So, you know, I didn't hear the call out, but again, I'm not social media wise. I'm not doing too good. So I don't really follow anything. Oh, there he is.
He's back.
But Kenny, yeah, no, I would like anything he does, you know, with these guys, I just like to back them. And, you know, they're at a point now where, you know, they know exactly what they're doing and where they want to go. And that's all that matters to me, really. You know, it's almost like the old saying, like, a good coach is when they don't need you anymore. That's the point I'm at. And, you know, they have everybody. Look, everybody's, you know how to train, you know what to do. You just got to go in and do it. And I think all they need is encouragement, somebody to keep them on the right track. And, you know, when they're down a little bit, you know, talk to them and just, you know, how to keep them positive in the direction of what dreams they want. That's kind of what I try to do at this point, you know?
Yeah.
Well, the beauty of being the former champion, as Aljamain Sterling is that a lot of contenders are going to have an appetite for that fight. I remember talking to Trevin Jones before he fought Cody Garbrandt, and he said, how many former UFC undisputed bantamweight champions are there, right? I mean, there aren't that many of those guys, Dominic Cruz and TJ Dillashaw and Piotr Jan and Aljamain Sterling and Cody, and I'm forgetting probably one or two, but there aren't that many of those guys. So a fight with Movsar Eovloyev, I think, makes a lot of sense, and good on Aljo for wanting that fight, because I do believe, and my weight class would probably be flyweight, but if I was a featherweight, that would be like the last guy I want to fight, right? He would expose my cardio to the world, right? I'd be flapping around. I would tap due to strikes. It'd be a fucking disaster, like Ray's hair, you know?
I tell you, well, it's not tapping due to strikes. You might get jabbed and start tapping. That would be worse, you know, like.
You question my toughness? I'm just kidding. You question my studio, though. I said off the top of the show that I was betting on my studio to make it through the whole show. And no sooner does Ray pop on than I lose the studio. But we got the backup ready to go. So I hope I am not peeling back the curtain. This wasn't off the record, but my friend Tyson Chartier, chief of the New England Cartel, asked me for Ray Longo's contact information. So without asking Ray's permission, I passed along this contact information, and he wanted to reach out to you just after the Calvin Kattar fight to see if you had any insight about Calvin Kattar. And I'm not necessarily asking you to give us any details of that conversation, but I know he was appreciative of your time. And I just thought it was a cool thing for an opposing coach to want to, you know, pick the brain and the wisdom of the legend Raymond Peter Longo, you know?
That's awesome.
Yeah. The problem is once they get done picking, they go, what the fuck is this guy? Like, what am I picking? Right. You know, it's like peeling off those artichoke leaves and there's just nothing there when you get that, you know, where the fuck is the heart of the artichoke? But no, I'm going to tell you, I had a great conversation, heartfelt. You know, I think, you know, I let him know that basically all coaches are in the same. We're all in the same boat. We all go through the same things. And he's not alone. I think that was comforting to him. I'll leave it at that instead. I don't want to get too deep into what's said. But that was basically it. Seems like a, you know, nice guy. I'm always a fan of those guys. You know, I tell him I'm a boxing heavy, you know, type of guy. So I love what they're doing, but it's not easy. We all deal with the same stuff. You know, people going to the PI, you train a guy and then he leaves you at the end. I mean, it's the same type of shit. You know, I hope I helped him, but I want to let him know that I'm no different than him. Basically was the, I think should have been the, what he got out of the conversation. And, you know, to me, loyalty is everything. Not everything, but, you know, smart loyalty. And that's it. But we're all going through growing pains. You know, you could listen to Matt and John Rollo talk on Rogan's podcast. I think they hit it out of the park with that, you know.
Yeah. So one of our listeners, Bruce Marshall, wanted us to sort of peel back some things with you and go down memory lane a little bit. And you can take this really in any direction you want to go, whether it's reliving a moment with Matt Serra or Chris Weidman. It's just crazy to think that what Chris Weidman did against Anderson Silva happened as long ago as it did right now, as we all just sit here and age in this very room right now. But even if it was your own journey and how you sort of crossed over from boxing to MMA, this week gives us a good opportunity to sort of, you know, dive into Ray Longo a little bit. So I guess I'll start it off by just asking about that Matt Serra rise, right? And Matt Serra moment, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, John, those days, you know, I told, you know, it's funny, man, is that you're bringing that up. I just went over this. I went to see Matt's school. He got new mats and I wanted to watch his daughter train. She's unbelievable. Shout out to Angie. She's killing it on the mat. She was doing a wrestling practice. She does like two-a-days now. So it was good seeing him. And then yesterday, Vellante and Weidman did a signing at Hofstra, which I thought was fantastic. LT was there. And they stopped by to say hello. So it's funny you're bringing up memory lane, because just even this week, I don't really get a chance to run around that much, you know, because I got routines and it's hard to break them. But, you know, Kenny was asking me what I did. So this week, you know, I'm kind of in the down, you know, there's some local fights and, you know, there's no big fights on the horizon. So I get to move around and, you know, visit people that are special to me. So Serra was... Look, Sarah's a unique individual. What without Sarah, there is no me. I mean, we went through the highs and lows together. You know, we both believed in each other. And, you know, what he accomplished against GSP at the time is just, you know, look, it still today holds weight. You know, it's like we were listening to, I don't know if this will make sense to you, but in the gym, Paranoid came on by Black Sabbath. I go, dude, I was a young kid, you know, fucking... whatever I was doing, listening to that music. But when you get music that still holds up 50 years later.
Right.
And that, you know, that's special. And that's what Sarah's knockout of GSP will never get old. And just everything leading up to the fight and all the doubt and all the criticism, you know, just to get through that was, it seems like that was always the mantra of the team. Nobody thinks we could do anything, but that's what made it special. That's where the loyalty comes in. Yeah. We're still holding on together 25, 30 years later, which I think is absolutely phenomenal. I don't think many guys could say that. Forget about the champions and all of that. Just the friendships and, you know, how close the families are and stuff.
Right.
That's not easy either, John, you know, so.
Well, the fact that Chris Weidman wants to spend his recreational time with you, I just think speaks volumes, right, about the relationship that you guys have. So when did you first corner an MMA fighter?
Oh, had to be Sarah.
And what year was that?
Oh, man, I'm really, John, I'm really bad with the years.
No fucking clue, yeah.
I think I met him in 92 or 93. I met him in 92, probably.
Yeah.
Wow.
So probably 94, 95.
Cody, can we send Ray a Black Sabbath t-shirt, please? Thank you.
Do you even know the song I'm talking about?
No, I don't. Kenny,
really? No, wow. I'm surprised at that.
Kenny and I grew up listening to like hip hop and, you know, thinking we were tougher than we are. Even Kenny, do I need to get the fucking picture? I'll get it.
But I'm saying that the old music still holds the test of time. When you could put on.
This guy grew up listening to Souls of Mischief, right?
Yeah, that guy never listened to Black Star. Yeah, he doesn't know he definitely doesn't know who Ozzy Osbourne is. Forget that guy.
It's like, do you guys have frozen yogurt or just ice cream?
Maybe that guy's more like the Mamas and the Papas back in the day. He would have been the Turtles. He might have been listening to the Turtles.
Oh, man.
Cody's throwing some of these out there. Did he fight Khamzat Vitayev or Graham Lewis, Jeff Telvey?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah? What years was that? The Khamzat fight was awesome.
2000. The Khamzat fight was 1998. So essentially, you cornered your first MMA fighter sometime in the mid-1990s, maybe 95, 6, 7.
No, maybe later, because he probably, you know, I was promoting those fights, so I don't know if I was jumping in the corner with him.
Right.
I want to say I was 100% training him, but see, I trained him for a while, and you'd have to ask him. I think I trained him and wasn't cornering him, you know what I mean? But I just really wanted to help him out. We were trained together. We were doing jiu-jitsu together. And my thing was, I thought the Thai boxing, Kenny, would be a great impact on his cardio. And then his, you know, at the time, and I'm just saying, I think people were a little lazy in the jiu-jitsu. Wasn't as people working out as much as today. So I thought he'd get a good edge on that. And his cardio actually went off the charts. And, you know, like watching that guy as a purple belt was unbelievable. He really was. His jiu-jitsu was absolutely phenomenal.
The man, dude.
He was the man. There's no question about it. Yeah.
For anyone in the Northeast that got a chance to see Matt compete, like I saw him compete at the Pan Ams, right?
Yeah.
And back then, you're talking late 90s. If you were an American and you beat a Brazilian in one match, that was a big deal. For you to win the whole thing, it was, you were like a unicorn. Even purple belts back then, if you were an American purple belt, was really rare. There just weren't a whole lot of them. And then certainly not amazing ones like Matt. So he was leading the pack. He was one of those guys that myself and I know a lot of other people were looking up to as one of the few Americans who were out there competing tit for tat with some of the best Brazilians in their weight classes. So it's just crazy. But Ray, I think about all the experience that you have and all the stories that you must have that you probably recycle and kind of remind your fighters about, like, hey, there's this guy, Matt Serra, that a lot of people kind of doubted. Are these stories that like kind of propel your fighters now?
I think they were. But at this point in time, I think the younger generation, it just, I'm not saying this in a bad way, but more self-centered and just now they don't, you know, that's, you know, it's almost like your father talking. I used to walk to school, you know, we paid you know, you're getting to that point where I'd rather not tell the fucking stories. You know what I mean? Because I'm very aware of, you know, of that type. You know, it depends on the feedback you're getting, but the stories will never grow old. And they, you know, if people really listened and believed in themselves and believed in their team and did the right thing, this is what we did, man. And it was a small group of guys from Long Island that just, you know, didn't care what anybody else was saying. And we believed in it. But, you know, Serra was, he was a phenom, man, with the jiu-jitsu. 100%. What I witnessed is the same thing I would witness with Weidman wrestling the guy. You know, like, a, you know, it just, they were completely dominant individuals, both of them. Matt with the jiu-jitsu, Weidman with the wrestling at the time. And, you know, Weidman had the luxury of, you know, we were already progressing. We knew what was going on. Kenny, you know, back in the day, man, it was on the job training.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
You know, everybody was kind of looking at everybody else. What are they doing? What are we doing? You know, you had your strength coach was going crazy. Who was that guy? He was putting out videos and
Burns.
Right. You know, everybody was calling. Can I do a seminar at your gym? But it was an exciting period of time. I'm saying if you look back, you know, they were pioneers, though. And people still, I bet you go back and look at some of Burns' stuff. It still holds weight today.
Burn with Kearns. Burn with Kevin Kearns. Yeah. If you want a fucking flat top, he'll tell you where to go for one of those.
Yeah.
Burn with Kearns.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Oh, oh, that was it. Yeah, that's it. But I'm just saying, like, everybody, like, I'm saying, Kenny, you were the guy that taught us how to, it really gave us how to, taught us how to make weight that time.
Yeah.
With the water loading, I think was Kenny.
And I was one of the first ones.
And he actually said, don't tell anybody. Like, you know, it was like a like we kind of keep it a secret.
Let the others die. Let
you know what it is. It was like, I viewed it like an arms race. We were always trying to get an edge up. Now it's different because everything kind of plateaued, and you know, it all comes down to basics. But at that time, man, everybody was learning, and Sarah's stand up really was getting good. Then he had a couple injuries, so you got to modify everything. So
isn't that cool though? Like we went from like, hey, don't tell anybody this. Yeah. Now you get a coach. You know, Tyson Charter are calling you up and going, hey, what do you think? Can you give me some advice? That's really cool, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. But you remember that, right? If I'm not mistaken, 100%. That was like a big secret. Nobody, you know, everybody was looking for information at the time. And that was the beautiful part about that. You know, I even, who's the guy at Extreme Couture? Oh, Jesus, man, I'm blocking. Mike Pyle. You know, one time we had a conversation, Kenny, at the beginning, like you'd go to a seminar, they teach you three moves, and then that was it. Then you'd have to go to another, you know, like you were, they were keeping, it was like a carrot, you know, like a, you know, you kept chasing after something. And now even that's, it's all over YouTube. It's all over everything. But back in the day, it was hard to even get techniques. There was no internet. So you had to go to seminars. You had to bring guys in. It was, and I think that's what made it special to me is, you know, I mean, I'm sure there were times my jiu-jitsu was unbelievable against a guy that completely sucked, you know, but it was a good feeling, you know what I mean? But now as everything progressed, man, then it became more attributes, endurance, strength, you know what I mean? But back then, man, if you had a couple of moves nobody knew, you were crushing people.
First mixed martial arts show I ever attended, Elite XC1 Destiny, February 10th, 2007, South Haven, Mississippi, Mike Pyle. First MMA fighter, second MMA fighter I ever met, Javier Showtime Vasquez was first. He competed on that card.
Yeah, Javier was, he was a good jiu-jitsu guy.
He was.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the transition MMA was, yeah. But, you know, look, there was a time when Seru was still at Henzo's with Ricardo, and Rodrigo Gracie came in. He was a black belt. And I think he got done with those two guys. He took his black belt off and put on a brown belt. I think they might have been brown belts. I mean, that's the way it was back then. Imagine somebody doing that today. These guys get a black belt, their chest is out, they're walking around. It's not what it was about back then. You know what I mean? Yeah. But that, I believe, is a true story. He took his black belt off and went back down to brown belt and started training his ass off with those guys. But that's how good those guys were. As brown belts, they were, both of them were phenomenal. Yeah. But Sarah, you got to remember, you got to talk to Sarah. He did a lot of those guys would come in and Henzo would have them roll with him. I mean, not roll with him, actually fight him. He did, you know, those school matches. I mean, Sarah was an animal, man. He really was. He was a pioneer, and, you know, he's taken a kind of a different path now. But I don't know if people had, you know, he was, you know, he still wants to fight. He's still crazy. He's still going. I told him he's actually going to get us killed. Because I can't even pick a nickel up off the floor. What am I doing? But
I have two other items with you, Ray, before we let you fly.
Yeah.
We are also scheduled to be joined by MMA Fighting's Jose Youngs to talk about this Ryan Garcia and Devin Haney stuff. Were you following the boxing over the weekend, Raymond?
I mean, I followed it. I didn't see it, but What was funny about it? Why are you smirking about that?
No, I mean, seems to be a win for recreational drugs, no? If Ryan Garcia was able to pull this off. No, I mean, I don't know.
100%.
Wow.
I mean, what's this guy? The guy was over 3 pounds. He's jumping. I mean, dude, it's
–
let me tell you something. And some people could correct me on this. Back in the day, nobody missed weight in boxing. I don't remember a fight getting canceled or – it might have been far and few in between, but this guy, 3 pounds over. And then when they asked him, he said, well, I want to win. You know, like, so he's looking at it as like, this is a strategy.
Yeah.
So, and he probably monetarily did win, which is even crazier. But, you know, I think commission.
He had to pay $500,000 per pound that he was over, but
still made money. You know what I mean? So,
yes, no.
I mean,
no,
I think the commission, that's the time the commission has to step in and say, you know what, the fight's not happening. This is what we agreed upon. And, you know, because now a guy could come up with a million and a half and still make money.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
Crazy.
You know,
all right. So I have a final thought with Ray, and then we'll get into the boxing on the other side with my man, Jose. So in terms of the BMF belt, right, and the conceptuality of it. So when this was first a thing for Jorge Masvidal versus Nate Diaz, Ray, and if you could answer this expeditiously, I would appreciate it. What was your initial thought when they announced the BMF title fight? Kenny, I'm coming to you next. But I'll just say for me, initially I was like, you know, these undisputed belts are where it's at. Initially, I had trepidation. Ray, do you remember where you were at with the BMF belt when it was first announced?
I don't remember where it was at, but I was definitely at the fight ringside, you know, with everybody watching it. And I thought,
were you pro? Were you con? Did you give a shit?
I'm going to say I was more pro. I was, you know, like at the beginning, I didn't really get it, but I was pro only because the two guys that were fighting, I really considered bad motherfuckers. Now, if they would have put two other guys in at the time, I don't think it would have worked. But I think the inauguration of that belt with those two guys, 100% two legitimate, tough guys, badasses. They deserve that recognition. I was happy to see both of those guys because they were never champions. I was happy to see them get recognition I thought they deserved. And now it's kind of taken on a life of its own where I think people are accepting it. And I think just what you saw the other night with Gaethje and Holloway is that, man, people are really going to go in and it kind of means something. Like they're not doing, it's not like old timers day at the ballpark. It's two guys that are going to, they really believe in that belt and they're fighting like it. So I think it's a good thing, especially for the guys that never become champion and never got that shot, you know?
Yeah. Canflo, do you remember how you felt about the BMF belt in that first indoctrination when it was announced?
I do. I thought both guys were certainly worthy of it. I remember kind of seeing it as very gimmicky back then.
Right.
But I think my perspective has certainly changed now in 2024, where I think it's a huge benefit to the fighters that are maybe non-title holders and guys who maybe have had a style that maybe didn't lend itself to make a title run and a title win. And it kind of celebrates those dudes who will fight anybody, anytime, that kind of deal. And it gives them kind of a nice belt without being a title holder. So I kind of like it just because it's a huge benefit to the fighters themselves.
Yeah, I have totally come around on it. I actually would go so far as to say this sport needs the ability to crown like the baddest motherfucker or two in it. And what a great opportunity for these athletes to be able to compete for it. Hey, Ray Longo. Yeah.
One other thing, John, I'll let you go. But yeah, you know, talking about bad motherfuckers, when I was in Vegas for Aljo's fight, I had the pleasure of running into BJ Penn, one of the all-time greats. And speaking of bad motherfuckers, that's another guy back in the day that I would have loved to have seen fight for that belt because, you know, like he's at the PI. I'm introduced him because the guy deserves all the credit in the world. But when I tell people this guy fought Machida in Japan at 205 or whatever, dude, that's incredible.
Heavyweight.
And you look at him now and you go, how the fuck did he do that? Machida's not a joke. So he's another bad motherfucker that. Yeah. Like when you get the right guys with the right mindset, I think it brings credibility to that belt. Yeah. And I think so far they're doing a great job with it. But BJ was a guy you could see back in the day that would have been outstanding. Definitely. Watching him fight, you know, for the bad motherfucker belt, because that's a bad motherfucker. And he's a pioneer and he did so much for the game. Hats off to BJ Penn. It was great catching up with him, as it always is.
The prodigy, BJ Penn, one of the all-time greats, fought Ken Flo at UFC 101. Really wish we got that one home, Ken Flo, but that's a conversation for another day. Hey, Ray, Longo's MMA. If you're in the greater Long Island area and you need mixed martial arts training, you go to Longo's MMA, best manager in the game.
Wow.
Ray, get the fuck out of here with you, buddy. That was really an inspiring Ray Longo minute today. Yeah. Trip down memory lane at Ray Longo MMA or something like that. Get a haircut, please, for next week.
I'll be all shaved up and haircut it in. Yeah. I'll make you happy next week. Right. Yeah. Okay, take it easy.
There he is.
Yeah, right.
Thank you, Kenny.
Here on the Anakin Florian podcast. Homework for our Anakin Florian podcast listeners. Do you remember the Saturday Night Live skit? And I'm not bringing this up because Longo had too much cold brew today. You remember the British toothpaste, Headley and Weish, Chris Farley and Phil Hartman? May they rest in peace. Phil Hartman comes on. He says, it's the only toothpaste I ever use. Headley and Weish, the British toothpaste. Google the skit. You'll thank me on the other side. All right. I believe we have my good friend on the guest line now, mixed martial arts and boxing reporter. And he is now in the Eastern Standard Time Zone, repping the Boston Red Sox. I hope that's not like an old school Brooklyn Dodgers
hat. No. Red Sox for life, dog. You know it.
MMAfighting.com zone. Jose Youngs on social media at Jose Youngs. Don't forget the S, my man. It's great to see you. How are we liking being on the East Coast and out of Arizona?
It's great right now. We've got that weird between spring and fall where it's like the leaves are still sort of orange, but the sun is out. But I tell you, when I landed the second day I was in New York, it just snowed. So I was like, I didn't miss this at all. Yeah. And then it just is gray and dreary. So didn't miss January, February, but right now this is my favorite time of the year up in the East Coast.
Well, Kenny, if you don't know, Jose's fiance or girlfriend, I guess,
girlfriend.
Jesus, John, is an incredible restaurateur, and they have just moved back to New York from Arizona. So this dude used to watch the Red Sox at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and now he's the belly of the beast.
Yep, not ideal.
Don't put the pressure on him, John. Give him some space, dude. Give him some time.
Going to convert. And I forgot how awful it is watching UFC pay-per-views on the Eastern time zone.
Yeah.
Because my first week I was moving in was the Anaheim fight card. I didn't go to the Ilya Volkanovski fight. And I was working and I look up, I'm like, it's 4 a.m. on a Sunday. Like, this is awful. Why did I ever come back here?
Not ideal. So there is one convenience for you, though, as someone who covers combat sports. Not unlike me in South Florida, a little out of sight, out of mind. Not a ton of things going through Arizona. Certainly some big shows in Phoenix here and there, but you were able to travel on foot to a lot of these events over the weekend. Devin Haney and Ryan Garcia was in Brooklyn, right?
About 25-minute train ride.
So professionally speaking, this has got to be somewhat of a blessing, even if in disguise.
It was pretty great going from a media day straight back to my own living room to work and edit video on my own internet and not using, you know, Hilton Honors Wi-Fi to try to upload 40-minute press conferences. That's for sure.
All right. So we've got a few minutes with Jose Youngs. I want to get into this boxing over the weekend. Ryan Garcia defeats Devin Haney by majority decision. I don't really even know where to begin. I mean, I know a lot of people were racing to bet the other side and potentially get a good price on a proposition. Ryan Garcia closed plus 500. I said to Ray, maybe this is a win for recreational drugs. He drank a beer on the scale. Where would you lead off when it comes to all that happened this weekend?
This was the – it was – because I've been covering MMA for about 10 years. I've covered, you know, a handful of boxing events. I've covered a couple of Canelo, the Mayweather-Pacquiao, Maymac and everything. But whatever, for whatever reason, Ryan Garcia has kind of captivated the – like the masses. Like I feel like he has the – he's boxing's version of Sean O'Malley. Where I have a lot of fan friends that don't watch boxing, but they were all DMing me like, what's up with this Ryan Garcia kid, like drinking beer and, you know, going on Twitter spaces while he's driving to the weigh-ins, talking about like the Illuminati and just acting, you know, acting off. And a lot of people were like, oh, why would they sanction this? Why would they allow this to happen? You know, misses weight by 3.2 pounds, chugs the beer on stage, which I guess he says was actually sparkling cider and water or something like that. So I thought he was going to get melted. I'm not going to lie. I thought Devin Haney was going to turn him off. And then the first punch of the fight, Devin Haney stumbles backwards. And I was like, oh, Ryan is a maniac that just happens to be a fantastic fist fighter. So it was the Ryan Garcia show all the way through. His numbers didn't, you know, on our website, didn't match 300. But in terms of boxing, because this was also the week of the Diaz-Masvidal like press tour. Anything we posted about Ryan Garcia dwarfed Nate and Jorge, which is surprising on an MMA site. So Ryan Garcia, for whatever reason, whether if it's his crazy antics or his TikToks or whatever, like whatever it is, people are interested. He is an incredible prize fighter that happens to be also a very talented boxer.
So Jose, do you think this is kind of very much calculated on the part of Ryan Garcia, where he's kind of upping that personality and that drama a little bit to get more interest from the fans? And also, was it kind of a Sun Tzu thing to kind of let Devin Haney let his guard down?
I don't know. And that's the thing. I don't know if Ryan Garcia is just a phenomenal actor or this is all actually things happening in his life. Because if you watch that, I heard you guys talking about it a little bit with Ray Longo, the bet that they made, like the $500,000 per pound. If the camera had the split screen of them, of the two of them making that handshake agreement, and Ryan's kind of talking to his dad at the same time. If you were there and if you could pan out, Ryan Garcia's dad is pleading with him, like, do not make this bet. Because he knows he's about to miss weight. Like, he knows he's not going to make 140. He's just like, Ryan, just like, don't do it. And Ryan's like, yeah, dad, I got you. And then he turns around and goes, all right, you're on. So he showed up at, and here's another, like, they did a face-off on the top of the Empire State Building on Tuesday.
Right.
I don't know if you guys have been on top of the Empire State Building. It is incredibly windy and cold in April. And Ryan shows up shirtless in ripped pants and a backpack on, like a combat backpack. And he's pacing around. And one of the boxing media just goes, Ryan, you cold? And he goes, human beings have the ability to warm themselves whenever they want just by flexing. And then he just flexes. And he goes, I'm good. I reset my body temperature. I'm like, hey, man, whatever works for you. People are interested in it.
I love it, man. He's releasing the crazy. Dude, so this left hook, you know, it's one of those things you know is coming and you can't stop it. You know, it was round one, round seven, round 10, round 11, I believe. The left hook played a part in all of those times where he hurt him or dropped him. Is this one of the most powerful singular weapons in boxing right now?
I think in this weight class, for sure. Not for nothing, like Devin Haney, a long time for when he would fought lower weight class, was kind of viewed as a weight bully. Like, he would just be bigger than his guys. He wasn't melting them. He was just physically bigger and was just more technically a gifted boxer. So he was fighting a guy that could match his power and speed. But Ryan is just a slightly bigger guy, and Devin looks like the smaller guy in there. And Ryan, even before he was this crazy, like, manic person on the press conference and everything, he would post these lightning, like him hitting mitts in his living room with his dad. So if you've been watching boxing, that's been his bread and butter his whole career, is that left hook around. And he caught Devin with it once. And then I don't know if you guys are watching, like, Kenny, you've obviously trained more martial arts than us, but I just felt like Devin just forgot how to jab after the third round, because he would land two jabs and it would push Ryan back, and Ryan would kind of do that shell up,
right?
And then he just stopped doing it. I felt like if Devin, like, stayed on the jab, and I don't know if he was rocked or the booing was getting to him or whatever, but he just gave up on what was working.
Yeah, I'm not sure he was the same after when he got hurt after round one. I think it threw him off. Yeah.
Yeah, so Devin, I'm not taking anything away from what Ryan did. Devin was fighting a bigger guy. Ryan is also just a supremely gifted boxer. Like, he's crazy. He's a handsome kid and people just don't take him seriously, but he's fought. Also, let's not forget, him and Devin fought six times on the amateur scene. They're 3-3. So Ryan knows how to beat Devin Haney, and he was just the bigger guy that stopped cutting weight. So I mean, there's weight class for a reason.
Jose Young's with us here on the Anakin Florian podcast. So how do you handicap a potential rematch? I mean, I know there's the Gervonta Davis fight, potentially the lone blemish for Ryan Garcia. I am no boxing expert, certainly not in this current form. But I see -700 next to Devin Haney in the first meeting as pros, right? I mean, what's happening? Is Ryan Garcia favored in the rematch or what?
I think it would really have to depend on if they can figure out what weight class this is going to be, because Ryan is on, like, 143.2 is missing by 3.2 pounds is no joke. And Ryan has said his body just physically can't get to 140. He's like, I can only fight as low as 143. Devin still technically has the belt, which is like the WBC just kind of rewriting the rules. The belt should be vacant at this point. Devin Haney should not be the reigning WBC champion. If they fight at 143, 145, I would have to imagine Ryan Garcia should be a massive favorite, because he's just bigger. He's just physically bigger and he's as fast as Devin, because Devin, like, after he dropped him in like those first few rounds, when you watch that chunk of like rounds 3-6, Devin is piecing him up. He is just the more technically gifted boxer. And then Ryan Garcia would take a playbook out of Yoel Romero and explode for 4 seconds and do all of the damage and just erase everything Devin did.
Yeah.
So if it's 140, I would have to favor Devin, because Ryan just can't do it. I'm sure you saw that there's a side by side of the fight against Gervonta and the fight against Tank. And it is, it's pretty terrifying, him getting to 135, 137.
All right, real quick before we let you go, I know you're a Boston Red Sox fan. They just swept the Pittsburgh Pirates. I lost three figures every day betting on the Pirates. No, I'm betting against the Red Sox every day. Okay. They're 13-10. You think this outfit finishes above 500 or no?
Depends on if Devers, how long Devers is on the IL, and it depends on Cassis is just getting examined on his back. If Cassis and Devers are out through May, through June, no chance. Not a chance. With Story out, Bayo is lighting it up, and Pivette is hurt. Like, our starting nine, we have maybe three people left from our original lineup. Not looking great. I'm hoping for just a high draft pick at this point.
Yeah, no, they're going under. All right. Yeah. I'm going to bet against them every day. All right, let you go, tell me which is more likely in 2024, that we get one fight out of John Jones, right? At least one, or two out of Conor McGregor.
Wow. What's more likely? I think John Jones. I've given up trying to figure out Conor McGregor. That's like trying to figure out Ryan Garcia's next move. It's just not going to happen. Right.
I wonder how much Conor McGregor's fighting future at least in terms of a regular active competition cycle, is really rooted in this result. Because if he beats Chandler, mm-hmm. if he gets a win over a ranked lightweight, even if this fight happens at welterweight, it potentially opens up undisputed championship possibilities for Conor at 55 and 70. And I do think if he gets through cleanly, which he was trying to do when he broke his fucking leg against Dustin Poirier, mm-hmm. that he's going to try to spin this thing back around. So I'm hopeful we'll see John Jones at Madison Square Garden in November, but you know, it's April 22nd, man. You know,
I know,
and ripping off the calendar.
I think the only thing that would play a big factor in Conor not being as active is his contract situation. I don't know how many fights he has left. If they're trying to get him to re-sign, or for whatever reason, they might, you know how it works. They might try to hold him a bit longer. But if he has like an 8-fight deal left, or he re-signs mysteriously, he might just plow through it. You know, fight Max for the BMF, try to get the Nate trilogy back after the Jorge fight. I have no idea. Conor is an enigma to me.
Well, hopefully MMA fighting is extending you, Jose Youngs. Outstanding job over the weekend at Jose Youngs. Don't forget the S on both Instagram and on X. Buddy, we appreciate you hopping on, and I guess go Red Sox, you know?
Go Red Sox, baby. Even though they're terrible, I hope they win every game, but I still want that high draft pick.
There you go. Hey, thanks, buddy. We appreciate you.
See you guys.
Jose Youngs with us on the Anakin Florian podcast. Yeah, that Ryan Garcia, Devin Haney stuff capturing the attention of most everybody in the combat sports world over the weekend, including Kenflo, you know?
Yeah, dude. Listen, interesting. Ryan Garcia at one point mentioned having a little sit down and hang out with Nate Diaz. And he was talking about how smart Nate is and promoting and all that stuff, and how he learned a lot from talking to him. And I wonder if he picked up some tips and tricks from that.
Yeah. All right, well, we are going to spin it forward. The UFC was dark on 420, but they will not be dark on April 27th. It is UFC Fight Night, Nico Lau versus Perez. It is time for the main event challenge, and for that exercise, we welcome on our good friend at Brian Petrie MMA, Big Gun Brian Petrie. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. Yes. We didn't talk to you after UFC 300, so I will admit to missing you a little bit as we sit down to converse today. How are we doing?
Doing fantastic. How you boys doing?
We're good, dude.
We're doing pretty well, buddy. How was the weekend with the children? Okay,
it was good. Yeah, so we have this amusement park in Cincinnati called Kings Island. I don't know if you guys ever heard of it. It's fantastic. We bought season passes this year for the kids, and we drove up, made a day of it. They opened this weekend on Sunday, and we get there and we walk in, we give them our passes, and some insurance company bought out the whole park, so we couldn't go. So that was a kick in the old dick. But besides that, it was good. I had to bribe the kids with toys, but other than that, nice relaxing weekend, which can't complain.
I was hoping he said that no sooner does he get in line than somebody asks him as the chief handicapper.
I wish, man.
Well, a lot of people asking about Brian Petrie when Ken Flo and I were in Las Vegas. So, all right. So we got a pronunciation of the week for you. And then I do have another Brazilian name file later in the program. That's a tease.
Okay.
Because I just can't wait to hear Brian take a shot at that one. But our pronunciation of the week is a fighter who is in the co-main event this coming weekend. He's coming off a bonus winning knockout of Zach Paunga earlier this year. He lost to Volkan Oezdemir in his UFC debut.
Yes.
And we would love to hear you pronounce this dude's name. I think the first name is like Bogdan or something. Bri, what are we working with?
That's how I'd pronounce his first name. Bogdan Guskov is what I'm going to go. It's probably Kov because he's, you know, but I'm going to go Guskov.
All right. So I played my daughter this file and then had her mimic it. And she was able to perfectly pronounce this name. And what you need to listen for is that he emphasizes the second syllable in both his first and his last name. Cody, bone marrow, take it away.
My name is Bogdan Tsarevich Guskov. Bogdan Tsarevich Guskov.
Guskov.
Bogdan.
Guskov. All right. All right, fellas, we're going to make some picks here in the main event challenge for the UFC Fight Night. And then on the back end, I will tell you how you did at UFC 300, and we will place our bets for UFC Fight Night, Nico Lau versus Perez. Main card opener in the welterweight division. Former pronunciation of the week featured name, Uroš Medić. The doctor is -310, taking on Tim Means, who is +250. So Medić, 3-2 in the UFC overall. Bit uneven in 2023, Bri, closed out the year with a submission loss. Odds makers suggestive of the fact that he should win here, north of 3-1. But I'd be careful counting out Tim Means' business. He is a man. He is 40. He's coming off a stoppage win over Andre Fialho last September. UFC start number 29, Bri, for Timmy Means. What are your thoughts on him here against the Dr. Uroš Medic?
Real quick, I got to take this hat off because I was trying to hiding my hair from old Johnny because I knew Johnny was going to hammer me. I literally grabbed the hat before I threw it on. I had too much hair. Fucking was making me itch. Anyway, let's get
you
to
look
the
like
fight.
Sonic the Hedgehog this week. That's a lot of hair. I mean,
my wife keeps asking me to cut it too. And I'm like, we will. Anyway, I love this fight. This is almost like a passing of the torch because I see a lot of medics or Tim Means and a lot of medics. You know, they're similar. They're long for the division. They're tough. They're scrappy and they're a little both inconsistent. You know, Medic is coming off, you know, he got beat up by that beast from Kyrgyzstan. I'm not even going to try to pronounce the name. Ran into a hammer. That's okay. Besides that, he's looked pretty good against Ellensberger. Come back when he's got some spinning shit with him. And Tim Means, this dude's going to be fighting until he's 60. He loves it. He's an animal in there, right? Great in the clinch, has some good chokes, but he's 40. He is a man. He is 40. This is a guy that spent a lot of his career at 155. Now he's at 170, which I think is good for his body. But I just think Medic is the younger, better fighter. And I think he's going to put it on Tim Means. I think it's going to be fun while it lasts. I like a finish by Medic. We're rocking with that. I'm a little afraid of the number because the inconsistency with them, but I'm willing to play it a little bit.
Kenflo, Uroš Medic -310 on DraftKings Sportsbook. Tim Means business +250. Who do you love?
Yeah, I think BP nailed it. I think they are very similar. Two tall, lanky strikers. I see Medic really struggling more with that pure grappler type style, and Tim Means is not that. I think he wants to stand up and trade, and they'll exchange in the clinch a little bit, but I don't think either of these guys are necessarily kind of looking to take it to the ground immediately. Maybe if it ends up there on a knockdown or maybe a trip or something like that, but I think these guys want to stand up and bang. And yeah, it's tough with Means being in the game for as long as he have. You know, this is a 50-fight veteran we're talking about here. And, you know, 1-3 in his last four fights as opposed to, 3-2 in the last five fights for Medic. I think Medic is poised for the win here, and I like him because of it.
All right, next main card matchup at featherweight. This should be a good one, fellas. Jonathan Pierce -185. David Onama +154. So JSP, sort of the forgotten man, right? He had won five in a row before he got ninja choked by Joe Anderson Brito. That was late last year. And now, still 31 years of age, the Johnson City, Tennessee product faces off with Factory X's David Onama. He actually hasn't fought Bryce since that bonus-winning knockout of Gabriel Santos all the way back in June of 23 in Jacksonville, Florida. So sneaky big fight at 145. Mm-hmm. Neither guy ranked. Jonathan Pierce, David Onama, Brian Petrie, who do you like?
Jonathan Pierce got a little cocky last time out, huh? He was bagging. They're talking shit with Brito. He's like, stand up. And he got choked out. I think that's a good reset for him. I think he's a dog. I think he's a intense grappler. Stand up needs a lot of work, but he's durable. He's tough. He gets after it. And his cardio is elite. David Onama, I was high on this guy. And then Nate the Train, baby, he just took him to the woodshed. You know, Nate the Train just outdogged him in that fight. And Onama's rebounded well, but his 45% takedown offense scares me because Jonathan Pierce, that's what he's going to do. He's going to hug your legs. He's going to take you down. His takedowns are very good, and he's not going to give up after one or two. Like, oh, I'll stand this round. No, he's coming after your legs. Hopefully with Onama, being with that, you know, I know he was with James Krause for a while. I'm not really sure where he's training at now. I think Trey Ogden maybe has a gym out there, but you better be working on your grappling. You better be working on things that people are going to take you out of your element. And I'm assuming David Onama is doing that. He's a fantastic fighter, but I like Jonathan Pierce here. I think Jonathan Pierce is going to out grapple him. I don't see a submission victory. I just see maybe a decision win for Jonathan Pierce, and he's going to get it done.
Kenflo, Onama's been at Factory X for a little while. I think there's a lot of talent, especially in and around his weight in that gym. I think Mark Montoya understands what type of matchup and challenge this is. Jonathan Pierce -185, David Onama +154. Kenflo, your thoughts?
Yeah, I do know after that last fight against Landwehr, where Onama was really out grappled and kind of was grinded out in that fight. He's been working very hard on his grappling, is my understanding. So I think he's going to be better, but you know, he gets a lot of things done with his striking, with his length. He's 5'11". The problem is JSP is 6 foot tall, also has the length and a little bit more. And he can strike and he can grapple. And I think he understands that if he can put a pace on him and tire him out and take him to those dark places, rounds 2 and round 3, he can win. So I'm leaning towards JSP. I could see Onama getting it done as well. This is a close fight. And of course, we haven't seen Onama in a little bit. A lot of things can change during that time period. But I like Jonathan Pierce here.
All right, Bri, get your singing voice ready. At heavyweight, we have an undefeated Brazilian fighter out of Curitiba. He makes his UFC debut this weekend, and we're going to share with you folks the audio file of him saying his name. He recorded this before he competed on the Contender Series. And then Big Gun Brian Petrie is going to try to duplicate exactly what he hears. So let us hear from the heavyweight, last name Denise, and Brian Petrie will follow it up. Let's hear the file, Cody, if you would.
That's Canada.
Jonathan Diniz. Jonathan Diniz.
Go ahead, Bri.
Jonathan Diniz. Jonathan Diniz. Where's the G coming from? I see a D here. What's happening here?
Kenny, tell him.
Yeah, it's that Rio accent, man. When you see a D and an I or a D and an E, they'll say G, Diniz. Jonathan.
So smart. Kenny's
Diniz.
So smart.
Janice, I'd imagine they'll go with Denise on broadcast, but we'll see. Jonathan Janice, minus 230. Austin Lane is plus 190. So Denise produced a first round knockout on the aforementioned Contender Series. Now he draws the former Jacksonville Jaguar, Austin Lane, who is still in search of that first UFC win. Bri, what do you make of the heavyweights?
Yeah, you know, Janice is coming from a kickboxing background. He is pretty solid. He's fought some good guys in kickboxing. He's not like high level like Pereira, but he's fought some good guys. And his Contender Series fight was fantastic with the one punch knockout. A lot of these kickboxing guys, they get stuck in a rhythm. It seems like he's trying to break that. He's still young in MMA. And Austin Lane, here's a guy who got knocked out by Greg Hardy, then rallied, got knocked out again, and then rallied off wins and got back to the Contender Series, got a W. The Toffa stuff happened, whatever. Justin Toffa is going to put a lot of people's lights out. I like Austin Lane's resolve. I like his mental, you know, high level athlete. He's not giving up on himself, but when it comes to this, you know, I know he's tall, he's lanky, he likes to get the fight to the ground, at least he's trying to. Being that tall is not going to help you try to get a fight to the ground. I like Jonathan Diniz, might be one of my favorite fighters to say now. At this point, I'm saying it all day. I like him more by knockout here. I'm not super confident anything can happen in heavyweight, but give me the Brazilian.
Ken Flo, Jonathan Diniz, minus 230, Austin Lane, plus 190, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think this is a tough fight for Austin Lane. I think his best bet is to try to keep Janice on the outside with long range strikes. And I don't think it's going to be easy to do. I think Janice is going to find a way to get on the inside, land some good hooks. And I saw a lot of his fights, and Janice actually has fought a lot of guys that were a lot smaller than him. So I'm curious to see how he deals with someone with this kind of length. But I think he's going to find a way. This guy's got a lot of power in tight. And I think he's going to freeze Austin Lane at some point.
All right. Next fight for us is in the flyweight division on the women's side. Both of these fighters are ranked. Karini Silva, number 13 in the world, is minus 155. Ariane Lipsky, 12th ranked at present, is plus 130. Ariane Lipsky's really rounded into form. She submitted Casey O'Neill on a big card, UFC 296 last year, really cemented her whole UFC body of work with that win. She's 6-5 in the octagon, 3 straight wins, works really hard, 25 pro fights now. She's only 30 years of age, but she's the underdog this weekend, Bri, against her fellow Brazilian Karini Silva, who's only won 8 in a row, and that includes a 3-0 start to her UFC career. So big fight here in the division in which they're all chasing Alexa Grasso. BP, who do you like?
I hope this isn't one of the MMA where both grapplers decide to strike. I mean, I'm sure it will still be a fun fight, but I want to see these girls on the ground because Silva's only submitted every opponent in the UFC that she's had, and Lipsky's 2 finishes in the UFC are by submission. So this is going to be interesting on the ground. I lean Silva here. I think this is a good low number for her, but I've been burning Lipsky before. She's on a 3-fight win streak. I picked against her all 3 fucking times, so I can't get her right, but I like what I see more out of Silva. I think she has more tools to win. I think she's better on the ground. And it's going to be a fun fight when it hits the ground. I'll be interested to see how it happens. I think Lipsky has obviously maybe a slight advantage on the feet, but I want to see this play on the ground. And if it does, I like Silva. I like Silva by sub too. Give me Karini Silva.
Nicely done, Bri. Silva has 17 pro wins, Kenfo, all of them by knockout or submission. 9 knockouts to go with the 8 submissions. And Brian mentioned 3 UFC starts, all submission wins. She's the slight favorite this weekend against Ariane Lipsky.
Yeah, and she's fighting Lipsky at a very interesting time where Lipsky has this three-fight win streak. She's shown great improvement since her last fight or last loss against Priscilla Cachoeira. And, you know, she just looks sharper overall. It seems like she's really putting in the work. She's taken a lot from those hard losses in the UFC. And, you know, I think if she's able to stop the takedown, she could do really well in this fight, especially if she's throwing those kind of high volume combinations. The problem is Silva is going to be a little bit bigger. She's going to play the bully role a little bit, and she's going to back up Lipsky, I think, in this fight, which is going to pose some problems. Way harder to finish your combinations with kicks and especially leg kicks that Lipsky likes to throw when you're backing up all the time. And Silva on the ground is an absolute menace, only a BJJ purple belt. But she is very dangerous, very confident with her submission game in particular. So I like Silva here as well. I think she can be a real threat. I think this is a big challenge for her. And we'll get a good gauge on how far she can go if she's able to look impressive here against Lipsky.
All right. Place your bets coming up in about 5 minutes as these guys tell you how they spend their $1,000 for this UFC fight night. But let us quickly break down the co-main event in the light heavyweight division. 11th ranked Ryan Spann, -205. Bogdan Guskov is +170. Guskov hasn't lost in the UFC when he has had a full training camp. That Volkan Oezdemir UFC debut was on short notice. And Ryan Spann, he's still ranked, right? Still number 11 in the world. Bri hasn't necessarily lived up to the general Saif Saud's lofty expectations for him. He is 7-4 in the UFC, but Spann has dropped two in a row, last of which came in a competitive split decision loss to Anthony Lionheart-Smith. That was in Singapore last August. Huge spot for Spann here. He's got to have this one if he's ever going to get to that precipice. What are your thoughts on the co-main event, Bri, at 205 pounds?
I'm intrigued. You know, Bogdan, I was high on him when he made his debut against Volkan Oezdemir, and Oezdemir was like, there's levels in this, bro. Like, Guskov's got some really good wins outside the UFC. He's fought some good competition. He's got a right hand from hell. You know, he looks like the evil, you know, you talk about the bad Anik twin and the good, you know, he's right. The evil Anthony Smith, essentially, right? He's just, that's what he is. He just has a little more menace behind his eyes than Anthony Smith. And he's got a big, powerful right hand. Technique is a little sloppy, but if he lands a right hand like he did in his last fight, it's curtains. And Ryan Spann is so athletic and big and powerful, but his fight IQ has plagued him at times, in my opinion. I think his front choke, his guillotine is amazing. I think his wrestling is getting better. His cardio is greatly improved. And then his power is going to be there because he's that built. He's built for power. And this took me a little bit because I was going to play. I like Spann in the fight. I'm picking Spann. But I was going to play Guskov by knockout, place your bets. But I can't do that. I can't give a pick and then waiver. This is a good hedge spot for people out there that are probably going to put Ryan Spann in a parlay. I see you. And you can always go round one, Guskov knockout, or round two, whatever. Because I don't see him winning a decision. But I like Ryan Spann here. Probably by a finish, I assume. But I'm going to ride with Spann. I think I'm confident in him and in his athleticism. And not to mention his record and who he's fought. He's been in there with the better guys. Hopefully that pulls out for him in this big co-main event spot here.
Kenflo, Ryan Spann, -205. Bogdan Guskov, +170 at the Apex Saturday night.
Interesting fight. I think both these guys are a little inconsistent. Both have high-powered offenses for sure. So I kind of agree with you, Brian. I don't see this one going the distance. If it does, I think it will be a dandy. But I'm leaning towards Spann. You know, I'm not going to touch this, and I don't recommend someone to touch this as far as a gamble, just because both these guys are capable of either looking great or looking terrible, even within the same fight. So let's see what happens. I think Spann should probably try to look to take this fight to the ground at some point, put Guskov on his back. And I think if he does, he should get it done. So I'm leaning towards Spann.
All right, main event, number 5 versus number 8 in the men's flyweight division. Mateus Nicolau, -185. Alex Perez, +154. So how about Perez stepping up here, making the quick turn after he goes 3 hard rounds with Muhammad Mokaev back on March 2nd. On the other side, you have Nicolau. He's had a year off since the knockout loss to Brandon Royval. Initially was to have his rematch with Manel Kopp on this date, but Kopp is out. Perez is in. Ken Flo, we will lead with you on the main event. Do you like Nicolau the favorite or Alex Perez the dog?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how Nicolau comes back after that last fight. I think he's a fighter with a lot of potential. I'd like to see him pick up the volume a little bit, but as far as skill wise and technique and all that stuff, I think he does have it all and could potentially make a run at that belt at some point. But this is going to be a question mark for me. Perez is a guy who has a ton of experience against high level fighters. You know, 1-3 in his last four fights, but you look at the losses that he had. It's Mokaev, it's Pantoja, it's Davison Figueiredo. Two out of those three guys are champions, former champions, a champion or former champions. And Mokaev is a guy who may be a champion. So I think Perez learned a lot from that fight against Mokaev. I thought largely his wrestling was pretty good against a guy who has dominated the competition with it. He's good at getting back to his feet. He's got great leg kicks. He's good at putting together combinations. He knows how to win rounds or at least make them close. And it's a relatively quick turnaround for him. So I think he's going to be in shape. I think he's going to be sharp. And I'm going to lean towards Perez here. I think what hurts him is the lack of consistency with his activity, and I think we should see a better version of him here in this fight.
I agree with a lot of that handicap without giving a prediction, Bri. I like Alex Perez getting back on the horse, staying in this competition cycle, and being healthy enough to do so. We'll see what he has for Nico Lau this weekend, Bri. Do you have a prediction for us?
So real quick, I got here a little late. Did we mention Kenny's shirt? Because it's very camouflage, but I know it's not off the rack. It's probably Yves Saint Laurent. It's probably $1,200. Yeah. He looks amazing. Yeah, I had to get it out there.
I've been
staring at him. I've been staring at him the whole time. Listen, I don't know what Mateusz Nicolaou has done to me in my previous life. I'm sorry, Nicolaou, because I pick against you every time. I dog on you. If I ever seen you in person, you get unlimited calf kicks on me. You're a fantastic fighter, but I never pick you, and I'm going against you again. While Kenny is leaning on Alex Perez, I'm falling all over Alex Perez. I love that he's staying active. The Mokaev fight, he proved to be really hard to take down, and when you took him down, he popped right back up. He still has the power. I love that he's getting the cycle to fight, because if you look at his topology page, it is just a canceled fights everywhere. Stay active, young man. Get your power back. Nicolaou's been clipped in fights before. He just got knocked out. He's been knocked out before. He's been hurt in a lot of fights as well. Perez has a hell of a right hand. Trust your right hand, young man. And I like Alex Perez at the dog money as well. Let's go.
All right, both guys like Alex Perez. He can be had right now, plus 154 on DraftKings Sportsbook. All right, place your bets, brought to you by JohnAnik.com, where you can get 20% off your entire order with promo code One More Sleep. That includes all Anik and Florian podcast merchandise, as well as all of the new One More Sleep designs. We ship to the UK, Australia, New Zealand, I'm not so sure. We're trying to get the Kiwis going. We ship all over the goddamn joint. All right. So Brian Petrie, unless I'm mistaken, went 2-4 on his wagers at UFC 300. $500 straight wager on Diego Lopez hit. $300 straight on Yuri Prohazka. You lost a couple of parlays. The Bo Nickel knockout prop was a loser as well. And Charles Oliveira straight. So that Oliveira Armand Sarugyan fight was a big swing fight for this particular challenge. Weekly total at UFC 300 for Brian Petrie, minus 530, 289. Year to date, minus 404 and a quarter. Kempflo goes 2-2 on his four straight wagers at UFC 300. You hit on Armand Sarugyan. That was an $800 bet.
Nice.
That paid 355.56. You also had $400 straight, did Kempflo, on Alex Pineda. You missed on Sadiq Youssef and Justin Gaethje, so -124.44 is the total. Still in the black, though, on the year. Kenny is at +755.71, and your lead, Kenflo, 1159.96. All right, gentlemen, back to $1,000 to spend on this here UFC Fight Night. Brian Petrie, how will you spend your $1,000 at UFC Fight Night? Nico Lau versus Perez.
So I should probably listen to Kenny, who is in the lead, but I'm an idiot because he said he's not going to touch Ryan Spann. I'm going to touch him with $300. I'm going in on Spann. I think he's going to, I'm convincing myself that he's going to fight smart. I do think he's a better fighter. Give me another $300 on Alex Perez.
Okay.
Give me $200 on Perez by KO, which we'll chase. I'll give that number to you later this week.
Okay.
And then give me a little parlay here, a little $200 parlay on Uroš Medic and Jonathan Pierce. And I chase that number for you because I already placed that bet. That's +107 on DraftKings Sportsbook right now.
Amazing. All right. Nicely done. Kenflo, you have the lead and $1,000 to spend. Who do you love?
Yes, sir. Let's go with Medic for $400. I like him there in that matchup. I also like JSP for $200.
Okay.
I like Silva for $3.
Okay.
And then I'm going to play a $100 parlay. I like Medich, Deniz, and Silva.
Deniz and Silva and Ken Flo lays off the main event. All right, Brian Petrie can be found at Brian Petrie MMA. Wish you all the best, buddy. Outstanding to have you back. We will talk to you, I'd imagine, in a week as we get ready for UFC 301. And actually, probably a good time to remind our listeners that we will be doing a show live from Rio de Janeiro on Wednesday, May 1st. That will be our UFC 301 breakdown and preview with all predictions from these fellas. So, Rye, we won't see you for about 9 days. Enjoy your family. Enjoy work. And we'll talk to you on the 1st of May.
All right, boys. I'll see you.
There he is, Brian Petrie, with us for the main event challenge and place your bets. All right, we got to bounce on out of here. Thanks to our producer, Cody Merrow. Thank you to our guests, Ray Longo, Jose Youngs, Brian Petrie. We are back, as I mentioned, Wednesday, May 1st. That'll be our UFC 301 preview. I will be live in Rio de Janeiro, and we will also do a show live on Sunday after the pay-per-view UFC 301 to recap that with you folks as well. I know a lot of our listeners and viewers were hoping for some more Sunday content after the pay-per-view. Ask and you shall receive. We'll see how I go in the Patrick Mahomes golf tournament this weekend. Hopefully I don't fucking fool of myself. Kenny Florian, martialarts.com and johnanik.com for all of your podcast needs and desires. Promo code one more sleep for all of your merchandise needs, including 20% off. All right, that's going to do it for this week. Thanks everybody for listening, for watching. Tell your friends. For Kemp, I'm John Anik. We'll talk to you on Wednesday, May 1st. Until then, be well. Respect this earth, especially on Earth Day you live. To the bread, he's cornbread. Cornbread. He's cornbread. Cornbread. Life is so precious. Do the best that you can. Keep your hands on the bar. Hit the open man. He's cornbread. Cornbread. He's cornbread. Cornbread. He's cornbread. Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time. Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.